Westchester Talk Radio is broadcasting live.
Good afternoon. It's a radio afternoon, but that didn't keep a radio. It's a rainy afternoon, but it didn't keep a lot of people away. This is Westchester Talk Radio, and we're broadcasting live from Mount Kisco, New York, the Mount Kisco Country Club. We're here for the 42nd annual Golf Classic for Guiding Eyes for the Blind. I'm Bob Marone, along with Jim Cleefield and, of course, Matt Cahan. We're produced this afternoon by Shaw Creative and made possible by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center, Hightower Westchester, the Westchester Office of Economic Development, Robeson and Accorda Therapeutics.
Life, science.
Thank you, Matt Cahan. You can download the Westchester Talk Radio app on iTunes if you like, through the App Store at Westchester Talk. You can like us on Facebook at Westchester Talk Radio and follow us on Instagram at Shark Creative. And we get to say hello to our first guest. We have met before, as it turns out. Please welcome Clayton. It's Clayton Mack?
Yes, sir.
Clayton Mack. Again, I remember we met at a very fine restaurant, I recall. Now, Clayton, we're going to cut to the chase on some of these issues. You do have a guide dog, and you lost your sight gradually some time ago. Tell us what evolved.
Yeah, about 10 years ago, I was diagnosed with a disease, retinitis pigmentosa, which slowly has taken my sight. It got to the point where, I had to get a hold of Guiding Eyes, and, you know, what a change of life it's been since I have gotten Eddie, and, you know, now the travels we have, and, you know, everything we get to do together is a lot safer, and, you know, it really takes a lot of stress off of me, so...
Eddie is, of course, your dog. Now, obviously, it takes two to tango. For you to reach this point and to ask for Eddie and to meet with the Guiding Eyes for the Blind, there's a certain amount of acceptance after toughing it through. Quite frankly, people are wondering, how are you doing and what has it been like for you?
It really has been life-changing. You know, without him, you don't want to... you don't travel as much, you know, you're not as willing as to get out and do the things you used to do, where now I have, you know, so much confidence in Eddie to get me where I need to go, in and out of, you know, a group of people, the grocery store. You don't have to worry about, you know, tripping over things anymore, running into people, constantly apologizing for not seeing, you know, the things that most people see in life, so...
It's almost unfortunate that you say you have to apologize for it, which you shouldn't have to, but I guess that's reality.
Yeah, well, you know, blindness is, it's not, you know, people can't tell that you are, you know, it's not like a veteran with a missing leg, you know, I look just like everybody else, so, you know, it's what it is.
No, I understand, but the realization of it, when you found out that you were losing your sight, which had to be very difficult, did you have that instinct that we all have to hang out for as long as you can to tough it out?
Yeah, I did. I really did. I pushed myself to keep going to work all the time and just try to do the best I could. And, yeah, I played it off like, you know, nothing was wrong. And then... when you get behind the wheel and you have a couple fender benders, it hits you when you start to scare yourself and you're like, okay, maybe we've gone a little too far with this.
You know, Clayton, I'm glad you brought it up because your courage is a reminder that our engineer, Matt, behind me, his wife wrecks cars and she has 20/20 vision. We call her Crash. She likes to bend metal. But listen, tell us now, so you reach out to Guiding Eyes. Tell us what it was like to get the dog and what's it really like? You know, we see what they do, but you can really trust them that much, can't you?
Oh my God, yes. You know, we get out and walk every day and he learns the routes that we take and he knows, okay, there's a curb here that I have to stop for. You know, we're going to make a left or a right here today. He makes his own decisions and I can even command him to do, you know, to go forward and say we're at an intersection, I don't see a car coming, he will stop. And he says, sorry, we're not going. I'm saving your life. And when you have that handle in your hand and you can trust him that he's going to keep you out of danger, it's just unreal. It really is. You never think that a dog could do something like that.
And for those of us who haven't had the experience, that is how we feel. The training process, and I guess we'll talk to some people along the way this afternoon, the training process must be incredible.
Yeah, it is. The instructors are incredible. Any questions you have, where you live, they kind of, they go about making sure that when you leave school, that there's no leaf unturned, that you're not going to run into an issue where you don't know what to do when you get home. So they do a phenomenal job of making sure that you and your dog are a team and that you're ready to get back to life when you get home.
How long did it take for you and the dog to become a unit, would you say?
Me and Eddie, we really kind of hit it off right throughout training. He's just one of those dogs that he's ready to work all the time. He means business, and it makes it easier for me because it's less I have to worry about. When he's ready to go, he's ready to go. We still get that time at home where I take the harness off, and he's still got a ton of puppy in him. So you throw the ball around the house, and he's still that goofball, 2-year-old lab that still likes to play fetch. And
we got a 40-year-old engineer who's like that. Likes to play catch. I tell you, I can't help but admire you and how you've dealt with this, but really what you're saying too about the Eddie, and we'll call him Eddie, that's a wonderful thing. And first of all, I commend you. I want to thank you for representing these people as well. You give a lot of people hope just talking to them like this.
Yeah, well, they gave me a lot of independence back, and it's truly life-changing. I mean, I've got a friend that has the same kind of condition I do, and he hasn't done anything. And I keep saying, dude, you gotta get with these guys. It truly is life-changing. So they do a phenomenal job, and I'm so happy that, I've gotten in contact, and I'm on my way now.
Well, Clayton, it's been, I tell you, it's been a privilege to talk with you. You give me a lot of inspiration and the other things that go on in our lives. You're dealing with a lot more, but thank you very much. My hand is out.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. And can you give his wife any pointers? Thank you very, very much. Take care. Hey, Eddie, what a pleasure to get to know you. Hi, Eddie. Eddie, you're a beautiful pooch. Hello. I speak dog. I guess he doesn't want to talk to me.
I think he's just barking up the wrong tree there.
Thank you very, very much, Clayton. Take care. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. This is Westchester Talk Radio. We'll be back after these words.
Look outside your window. What would you like to see? Imagine all the things that could be done to beautify your property. At Michael Labriola, we've led the field over 35 years. Our expert staff brings all their best to give you what you need.
For more than 40 years, Michael Labriola Incorporated has provided complete landscape construction and site development services that will add beauty, enjoyment, and value to your property. Want to make some changes to your landscape this spring? Maybe extending your living space to the outdoors with a functional outdoor kitchen or adding a patio or walkway? Michael Labriola Incorporated can evaluate your property and offer creative ideas. 914-273-6530. Commercial properties always welcome. Learn more at michaellabriolainc.com.
Michael Labriola, our last name is the first name in landscapes.
Returned once again. This is Westchester Talk Radio. It's a lovely afternoon because what these people are doing here. We're Westchester Talk Radio, and we are here at the Mount Kisco Country Club in Mount Kisco, New York, for the 42nd annual Golf Classic for Guiding Eyes for the Blind. We're produced this afternoon by Entergy. We're also produced by Indian Point Energy Center, Lipolis Electric, Genesis Exhibits, Breezemont Day Camp, Facelifts Remodeling, and the White Plains YMCA.
Youth Development, Healthy Living, and Social Responsibility.
That is Matt Kay, and I'm Bob Marone, here along with my co-host Jim Cleefield. And we'll get to that later. He loves when I talk about where you can get the app. But I can't wait to get to our next guest. You know, we've already spoken with Clayton. We will speak with others who, when we talk with them about the dogs, that's what Guiding Eyes for the Blind does. When we talk to them about the guide dogs, it's not just a pal that they have. They put their total trust and confidently so in these dogs. And we were saying here, we would really like to talk to the people that train those dogs. And our good fortune, the next person to come by the radio booth is, was then, is now indeed Shannon Walsh, the supervisor of training. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You have, it must be a labor of love, but you have a tough job.
I guess. I mean, I play with dogs and work with people all day, so it's not really that tough.
Well, I have an answer for you, but I'll another day. No, but you play with dogs because you love dogs, but nonetheless, you're training them to do what we can, without being too smoltzy, God's work. What makes them so amenable to it, and how do you go about doing it?
So, I think we have great staff for breeding and picking out the right temperament and traits that the dogs are needed to be a successful guide dog. And the process is long. So we have puppy raisers who raise our dogs for us, volunteer for 18 months.
Do they take them home?
They get their dogs, they pick them up from Guiding Eyes at 8 weeks of age. And through our staff and help, we do classes and we teach them the basics.
Back up. So because this is too good not to get to the bottom of. Who picks the puppies? Who's the scout?
Who picks the puppies?
Yeah, in other words, when you decide that this is a puppy we want to train, that's an early time to do it. Who makes that decision?
So we have two campuses, and we have a breeding center. So we breed and raise, we breed our own dogs. So our puppies go through a test at 8 weeks of age. And at that test, we decide whether they, at that stage, can go and become a guide dog through some little tests we do.
So you keep canine sex slaves then?
I have no comment.
All right, so you breed them. So you know you're ahead of the game in terms of temperament. So now the people that you send them home with, do they have a list of things they have to do?
Yes.
Tell us.
Not only do they have a list, they have a book, and they have people who work with them weekly and then monthly, and there's check-ins, and we make sure that we're raising the dogs properly and that they're learning all the basic stuff we need, which is housebreaking, good house manners, good social manners, how to behave on leash, all the basic stuff that makes a good dog. And then once that's complete, then they come to us at the training center for advanced work.
Why are you looking at me like I should be learning these lessons myself? We're with the delightful Shannon Walsh. She's the supervisor of dog training. Now, Shannon, again, these things sound rote, but they're not. This takes skill. Did you always want to train dogs and then wound up training them for this specific purpose? How did this come about for you?
For me, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a veterinarian, and then I got to college and decided it was way too much work.
My daughter did that. She wanted to be a veterinarian, but she wound up being a microbiologist. Close. But yeah, I get it.
I ended up with a cellular biology degree and forgot vet school. And then I knew I wanted to train dogs. I've always worked with dogs. Guiding Eyes allowed me to teach and work with dogs, because also teaching people was also something I wanted to get involved with.
Well, that's true, because you're, in effect, you're teaching both of them. Now, we're going to take one, the other, then both. Let's talk about the dog. How do you train a dog to worry about automobiles? How do they know to look right and left? How do they know not to walk into that post over there by the banister? How do they know?
So you just asked a loaded question that has many answers. I'm going to give you the basic for that.
Yes.
Is we teach the dogs basic skills first, which is work curb to curb. So pull and harness, work from one curb to the next curb. When you get to that curb, it's not the dog's decision to cross the street. It's actually the person who's visually impaired working the dog. So before someone could even get a guide dog, they already have to know how to listen to their traffic patterns and know when is the safest time to cross. So once that's complete and they know that process, the dog is there as an aid. So if they accidentally step into the road too soon, or if somebody cuts them off, the dogs are trained to back up and get them out of that situation. And we do that with lots of patterning. Everything in guide work is pattern. You show a behavior, and you show it and show it and show it, and then you say, okay, do you know it yet? Good dog, you know it. We'll move on to the next one, is the basic.
Well, that's all we can do with the time we have, but that's fascinating. Now, you have to train the owner of that dog. What is that like, and what are those principles?
So we, someone like Clayton Mack comes to our school for 3 weeks, and he lives in our dormitory.
Just 3 weeks.
And he comes and he trains with us, and we literally start from the beginning and say, here's your guide dog, and we create a bond between the two. Then with those, with the bond and the relationship that we start, we teach him the, everything from the beginning to the end, very small increments, very basic roots, how to work with his guide dog, how to do obedience, even how to pick up after a dog when it goes to the...
Again, you look at me. Obedience and... I don't get this. All right, no, continue. Shannon Walsh is with us. She is the supervisor of dog training. She really knows what she's talking about, except she's looking at me funny. Let's continue. So now you have to bring them together. What is that like? And do you ever have a match that doesn't work?
Yes. So when we bring them together, we hope that we've established that we know the person well enough, how fast they walk, where their environment is like, to match them with a dog whose pace is also the same, that can handle the environments that they're in, and we put them together. And sometimes we're off. I mean, we're people making matches, reading people, reading dogs, and sometimes it doesn't work.
This is a tough one, but it has to come up. Suppose you get somebody like Matt, who's not the sharpest marble in the collection. You have to spend a little more time with them?
Yes. So we do have, in our three-week program, sometimes we do go home with our graduates to say, hey, we're going to help you now in your home area and give you a little bit more work. We also have 8 field reps who live all over the United States. So when we have anyone that we've serviced and helped them get a guide dog, we have people out in the field that can go to their home and work with them in their home area.
Shannon, this is extraordinary. We just want to remind people what and why we're doing. We're here at the 42nd Annual Golf Classic for Guiding Eyes for the Blind. What she's talking about is what they do. This is as close to God's work as you can come. How long are you doing this?
21 years this year.
You look a little young to start 21, no? Don't tell me. No, I don't want to die.
I was 16.
You were in preschool, right? Yeah, she was in preschool when she started doing this. But we could talk with you all day. What an exceptional person. Now, let's talk about, before we send you on your way, there's an element here, and I was thinking it when talking with Clayton. At what point can someone who's lost their sight, I think she's going to give me a treat, folks. At what point someone's lost their sight, they're petrified to take a step. How long does it take to get the worst of the fear out of that person?
So we don't deal with people right when they first lose their vision. They come to us after they've had orientation, mobility, and life skills through other avenues. And that process for each person is different. Some people are actually born visually impaired or blind, so they've gotten their whole life to work through it. And someone like Clayton, who's lost their vision later in life, for some people it could take a long time for acceptance and to work through that process, and I can't even put a number on that.
Okay, well, that makes sense then, because we were wondering about that. Well, Clayton's certainly an exception the way he's accepted it and moved on. Now, something that people must be wondering, or at least I am, we all own dogs, or at least 80% of the world, I think, does. They're very special animals. You must see things that would shock the rest of us in terms of how smart they are. What is the bonding like? How smart are they? What have you learned that maybe you didn't realize when you started this 21 years ago?
Probably the most I've learned is what these dogs are capable of. And it's not even, they are smart, but the bond really is what carries the relationship for that dog to work as hard as it does for each person. And I think what's shocking is how deep and strong that bond can go. And that's what really carries a team. And if you can create someone and teach them the skills, then they can make a really good dog.
You know, your eyes light up when you talk about these animals. It's really nice. I could go on and on. Come here, what's his name? Her name.
This is Darcy.
Now, about Darcy, I've always wondered about this. You have to train them also a special kind of dog. Like, if they're on a plane with someone and they have to go, they're trained to hold it in?
Bit of tricks of the trade. Yes, they're housebroken, so they do know how to hold it in. But if you're flying with a dog, it's always best to give them very little food and water before you leave, so they don't have a reason to go.
Gotcha.
So depending on the length of the flight, how long you're going to be gone for is how much you might feed or water before you get on that plane. And it is the responsibility of the person to make sure that they can get that dog to go to the bathroom before they get on the plane, right before and right after. And luckily nowadays, these airports have a lot of places inside airports now to park your dog.
Well, Shannon, I really, I could talk with you all day. You are what this place is all about, guiding eyes for the blind. And they're lucky to have you, and we're lucky, the population here in Westchester is lucky to have guiding eyes for the blind. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you very much. I just want to say that you sound just like my cousin Vinny in the movie, and it's really
Wait. You really want me to go there, huh? Because I can go into the deep radio voice and get out of Vinny, but now I'm going to go to Vinny for it. Why, you got a problem with what? I'm funny? I'm funny how? What the heck is so funny about me? Is that what you wanted?
Perfect.
Listen, thank you so very much. What a wonderful woman. My goodness, these people are lucky. The Westchester's lucky. We're going to take a break. This is the one, the only Westchester Talk Radio. And remember, you can download the app. If I don't do this, Matt's going to have a fit and we'll need to be dog trained. You can download the Westchester Talk Radio app on iTunes through the App Store at Westchester Talk. Like us on Facebook at Westchester Talk Radio. Follow us on Instagram at Shaw Creative. We'll be back right after this bark.
Pasquale Ristorante is the perfect dining experience. Your favorite Italian comfort food, plus the comforts of home away from home. Pasquale Ristorante has been treating you like family for nearly 20 years. And if you need catering, Pasquale will take care of it. Pasquale Ristorante, bringing family, friends, and food together.
Pasquale Ristorante treats you just like family. Pasquale Ristorante, an Italian specialty.
Pasquale Ristorante, 2 Putnam Avenue in Port Chester.
Tarrytown to Port Chester.
We've got Westchester covered.
We are Westchester Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and we are back. It is a rainy afternoon, but it has not even blighted a little bit the fun that people are having and the joy. We are Westchester Talk Radio. We're broadcasting live this afternoon from the Mount Kisco Country Club in Westchester, New York. We're here for the 42nd Annual Golf Classic, Guiding Eyes for the Blind. We're produced this afternoon by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center, Durante Rentals, Reverso Associates, J.P. McHale Pest Management, Michael Labriola, and the Salem Golf Club.
A lush panorama of rolling hills and new pool expansions.
That is Matt Cahan. He's the engineer and all-around anchor for us. I'm Bob Marone, and I'm here with my co-host, Jim Cleefield. My next guest is an interesting woman because she is a visually impaired golfer, but we're happy to say that she beat our boss this afternoon, so she's a winner in our group, and her name is Diane Wilson. Diane, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure that you beat the pants off our boss. Now, visually impaired golf, tell us about that, and you have a big smile on your face. So.
I always do, because my golf, you have to keep smiling or you don't keep going. But
I do understand. When did you stop playing?
I played first in 2009. I actually started losing my vision when I was in high school, but it went very gradually.
Really? So, okay, you started in high school, which was only, let me handle this carefully, 8 years ago.
Yeah, close to it.
See, did I do that well? Did I do good, Mom?
I'm 7, and you're right about there, yes.
Yeah. What was the condition?
Macular degeneration.
Okay.
That many years ago, at the time, they didn't really know what it was, so they just said they couldn't correct my vision all the way, and then it got worse, so.
When did it get to the point where you really needed to do something about it, perhaps change the way you live, join golf for the visually impaired?
Well, it was about 2007, 2008. I was a teacher for 45 years.
Wow.
And when I realized that I couldn't tell if it was a child or a dog on the playground, I knew that my vision was affecting my jobs.
I'm going to hell with this. I can't tell if Matt's a dog or a kid, and he's right here sitting next to me. So, but that's because of the way he looks. All right. So it started affecting you. So is that when you retired?
Yes. I retired actually a couple years later. The school district provided equipment that could help me and an aide in the classroom. But it got to the point, although my husband and I still substitute teach.
No kidding.
Yeah. And we're called the twofers. So two of us go in, two certified teachers. I tell him what to do because we teach elementary and he's the eyes and he reads the books. And
oh, so you're the brain. He's just the tool.
Yes. Oh, but this isn't going to be published.
Oh, no. We'll be sure that he hears this. Yes, ma'am.
What school district were you in?
I taught for 30 years in Anchorage, Alaska.
And Anchorage, home of the Anchorage Aces of the East Coast Hockey League, have you?
Yeah. The Anchorage Aces were great when we were there. And then we taught in Renton, Washington, and now we substitute in a little town called Quilcene, Washington, which the student body is 150 students in grades kindergarten to 12th grade.
Oh, okay. So you're not a Westchesterian. You're from Washington. The Boeing planes. I've been to the plant in Renton. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it kind of diminished when we first moved there is when they cut back, and then now it's building back up again. But, yeah, we actually live across the water in a little town called Port Ludlow.
Where'd you grow up?
Eugene, Oregon.
I've been to Eugene, too. The Northwest was, you must be used to this rain and all the trees then.
That's true, but this is warmer rain than what we've been having, so I could live with it most of the way.
My guest is Diane Wilson. She's taught for 45 years, and now she uses her husband, I hope he hears this, something like a puppet. She takes advantage of his good side to do what he's told. But that's a husband anyway, isn't it?
It is. My husband is like 6'3" and 300 plus pounds, so.
Doesn't matter. He has no free will. He's married.
50 years. So, yeah.
There you go. He not only has free, he has no sense of self anymore. Now, bless you. Why, after all you've been through, all you've accomplished, obviously you see well enough you could read the prints right, and why golf?
Well, my family were always golfers, but living in Alaska at the time we were there...
that's not a big sport.
No, one golf course, basically.
Snowball golf.
Yeah, and my brother lost his vision. I actually started losing mine, but when his happened, it went quickly. So he joined the USBGA in 2006, and he was always very... he won five times. He's one of these golfers that... played when he was young, and if it isn't perfect, it isn't good. I didn't play much, so I just can enjoy when I get that one good shot every four or five. Life is good. So
isn't golf awful that way? It's addictive in that you can play badly all day, one good shot, and you come back.
Oh, it does. All it takes is one. I gave my mom a golf magnet that says, I hate golf. I hate golf. Good shot. Oh, I love it.
Now, something that my fellow broadcasters, Jim Cleefield and Matt, really care about. Tell us how you whooped up on Andrew Castellano.
I actually didn't.
But you're going to say you did anyway.
The hole before I joined him, I got the drive on the par 3 and put in a 25-foot putt.
Yes!
So I birdied a hole. I haven't done that in the 2 days of the tournament, but that was my big claim to fame, but it was right before I joined him.
I bet you could see the tail tucked between his legs anyway. So I guess you're out here to support what they do, aren't you?
Oh, definitely. The guiding eyes, the... we have a number of friends, and being in blind golf, just meeting the people, and it just encourages you. I mean, like I say, I have some vision, and I see the people who have no vision, and just how everybody, they continue on. Life is good. You don't have to give up just because you start to lose your visions.
Diane, one gets the sense that you were always looking at the bright side of things, so to speak.
Well, the scorekeeper yesterday, after I had a few really bad holes, told me I had a good spirit. I think that's a way of saying I'm not a great golfer, but I'm going to keep going. So.
Now, going back to what you were telling us before, did you get Mr. Castellano to cry a little bit when you hit that shot?
Actually, I hit it right before I joined their group, and then they saw me have a good shot right after I left their group. So maybe that...
Well, you're close enough. A little bit of fake news never hurt anyone, What a delightful woman. Diane, thank you for coming all the way from Renton, Washington. What's the name of the little town you live in now?
Port Ludlow.
Port Ludlow?
Ludlow. It's a little village by the bay. It's across the Puget Sound from Seattle. So it's, you know, half-hour ferry ride, an hour drive, and then you get to Seattle.
So. An hour drive, that's like what Mr. Castellano hit when he was like an hour drive, right? But before you, one more thing before you go, what brought you to Anchorage anyway?
My husband's family homesteaded up there when he was 5 years old, and we met in college, and we got teaching jobs, both of us, so we went up there. We told my parents for 3 years, because we were going to get rich on the $10,000 a year that teachers got there.
Oh, you were rich. Yeah, you were independently wealthy. Where did you meet your husband? Where did you go to school?
I went to school at, both of us went to Oregon College of Education, which is now Western Oregon University, and it was basically a teacher's college in Monmouth, Oregon, so...
Well, thank you very much. We promise not to tell your husband that you use him as a hand puppet. We won't tell him.
Yeah, but I have a friend who was standing close and heard all of it, so I'm in trouble either way.
Trouble's what we do. Listen, congratulations. Thank you very, very much. All the best to you and your husband.
This is what a wonderful event, and anything you guys do, it just is fantastic.
So. Well, it is every year. Thank you so much. All righty, this is Westchester Talk Radio. We're going to take a break. We will be back after these words.
Give your home or office a facelift. You want to relax outside with a nice glass of wine, but you need to paint the house. You want to hit the links for a round of golf, but you need to paint the house. You both are ready for your vacation, but who will paint the house? Facelifts will. It's time to give your home a new look. They are the professionals to call when your home or business is in need of a paint job. Facelift staffs only highly trained interior and exterior painting specialists. Just select the color you want or use their trained color specialist and let them do the rest. Any size house, indoors or outdoors, they get the job done quickly, professionally, at your convenience and to your satisfaction. Plus, they offer repair work, power washing, carpentry, and generator installation for your home or office. Is your home in need of a facelift? Get to do all the things you want to do by letting Facelifts paint and remodel your home. Easy to deal with, easy to get in touch with. Licensed and fully insured. Call 914-806-8627 or visit faceliftspainting.com.
News, trends, and more.
No one knows Westchester County better than we do.
We are Westchester Talk Radio.
We are back, and the rain has stopped. We're grateful for it. We are Westchester Talk Radio. We are broadcasting live from the Mount Kisco Country Club in the heart of Mount Kisco, New York. Westchester, New York, to be more specific about it. We're here for the 42nd Annual Golf Classic, Guiding Eyes for the Blind. For the blind. Sorry about that. We're produced this afternoon by Shaw Creative, made possible by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center, Hightower, Westchester, the Westchester Office of Economic Development, Robeson, and Accorda Therapeutics. I'm Bob Marone, here with Jim Cleefield and Matt Kayan. And our next guest is Ken Theobolds, and he is the Vice President of Regulatory and Government Affairs for none other than Entergy. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Bob. So nice to see you.
Well, it's nice to see you again. You have an interesting job. I mean, you're working at a power plant, government and regulatory affairs. You have a lot of regs and things to worry about.
Absolutely. You know, running that power plant safely and within the prescribes of the federal and state regulations is an important consideration, and it's been my honor and pleasure on behalf of over 1,200 people there at Indian Point to work diligently to make sure that we're doing the right thing and that people understand the value that the power plant provides to this local community.
Well, how long have you been with them?
I've actually been with Entergy going on 17 years.
Wow. Although it has to be bittersweet looking a couple of years down the road at the plant being decommissioned.
It is bittersweet. During those 17 years, I've met so many great people in Westchester and even all the way down to New York City, people who appreciate the value that we provide and what we're doing. So it's been a great 17 years. And, you know, markets change, things change. And, you know, we came to an agreement with the state for an orderly transition and shutdown of the plant so that a local community could plan and... you know, that the transition could be made post Indian Point.
Do Do you think will you stay in the nuclear power industry?
Me, I'm an old man. I'm 60 years old.
You're a baby. What are you kidding?
You want me to work forever?
Yeah, I do. Actually, you know what I really wanted to talk about? I kidded you before we went on the air that I'm a fan of Entergy, and what did it was I do morning radio as well as what I do here for Westchester Talk Radio. And I've always believed in nuclear power, but I wanted to put myself where my money was, my body where my money was. So I went for the training. And then I spent 2 days at the plant and did a six-hour special. Two things, and you can talk about them. One, the way it was run, the thoughtfulness of it, right down to how you manage the control room. That's number one. But the biggest surprise was the sense of family and professionalism of the people that work there. You know, so many people were afraid of the plant. It's almost like they had their own little thing. Talk about both those things, please.
Well, you know, our control room operators, the people who help run that plant, you know, these are licensed professionals. These are people with graduate degrees who have to undergo rigorous training, and not just training once, but retraining to make sure that they're consistent with changes in technology and information and processes and procedures, and to make sure that they're on the top of their game. So the safety of the public is our number one concern. We have a public trust to run and provide electric power, and we have to do it in a safe and responsible manner and to the highest standards. And, you know, in a lot of other places, you know, if you make a mistake or what, you know, nobody knows. Everybody knows when we make a mistake or if there's an issue. But our folks understand that this is an issue of continuous learning, of being in a questioning environment where you question everything to make sure that we're doing things the way they're supposed to be done to maximize both the efficiency of the operation and the safety.
I just wish that people who've never been there could see, what you know, and what you go through. For example, how the hallways are at different angles because of the way radiation travels. If there were an attack on the plant, the way the different gun shields are set up. I mean, again and again and again, or something as simple as, and I know I'm telling you what you already know, but for the listeners, you can't wear a hard hat in the control room because it might fall and hit a button. I was so impressed.
Yeah. You know, Over these past almost 20 years, we've run thousands of people through that plant. I believe more people have toured Indian Point than any nuclear power plant in the country. And in fact, if more people were given that opportunity to see what the detailed operation is and what the margins of safety are, we would have a lot more support. But the fact of the matter is, the majority of people do support safe production of electricity through splitting atoms. Basically, you know, all we do is split atoms to heat water to make steam and turn turbines. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what we're doing.
And I've seen the turbines as well. We're talking with Ken Theobolds. He is the Vice President of Government Affairs and Regulatory Issues for Indian Point. Let's wax to the future a bit. My own personal belief is that we are not seeing the end of nuclear power, that it is the transition source to other kinds of fuels, et cetera. Is that accurate, or is it going away?
No, absolutely. The fact is that we're able to produce large amounts of electricity with minimal impacts on the environment. And as we transition to integrating more renewable fuels and energy sources, battery storage, distributed generation, nuclear will continue to play an important role for decades to come. And again, the most important thing is we're doing this without carbon emissions. You know, that's important as we address issues of climate change.
Now, what about getting rid of the nuclear waste? The one thing I know that has been difficult for you at Indian Point is the politics involved in moving the fuel. I know you have it in very safe casks, concrete casks, et cetera. Do you think we'll solve that problem in the next decade or so of where to put the spent fuel?
Well, you know, the federal government, you know, part of the deal was that the federal government was going to take responsibility. And, you know, we use this terminology, waste. all we're talking about spent fuel rods that have taken a turn through the reactor. In fact, it would be possible if the manufacturing or industrial facilities were available to reprocess that fuel and use it again to produce more energy. So, you know, I know we talk about it as waste, but really what we're talking about are spent fuel that could be reused. And, you know, folks in Washington are going to have to figure out, you know, what they're going to do. Ironically, again, for over the history of the nuclear power industry, I could take all that spent fuel and put it on a football field. And you know what? You'd know where it is, and you know how much you've got. From many other sources that we've been using for centuries, you know, that waste is in the atmosphere or in the ground or in the air. So, you know, it's an issue. Hopefully the federal government's going to come to a solution, whether it's interim storage or natural repository. But ultimately, we know where it is. We have it. We have control of it. And, you know.
Now, your background yourself, were you trained as a lawyer with a regulatory bent, or are you also a scientist that has a thing for understanding the regs?
Well, I'm a full-fledged bureaucrat. I started my career as a congressional staff assistant in New York City on the east side of Manhattan. I was honored to work in city government for a time and served in the administration of Mario Cuomo. So I have an extensive background in local, state, and federal government, and I was given the opportunity to put those talents to use for Entergy and Indian Point.
Did you feel as safe as, let's say, I did or other tourists did when you first walked in there? Did you say, hey, this place is really well run? Did you get that right away?
You know, it's an amazing industrial complex. I live in New Rochelle, and, you know, I can't sell anything I don't believe in, all right? And my passion is with that workforce and with our commitment to safely and reliably do our job. And as I say, I live here in Westchester and New Rochelle with my family, my children, and there are some things that I lose sleep about, including when my daughter's out too late.
You poor soul. How old's your daughter?
She's just turned 20.
Oh, you should save your liver for this. Oh my God. Go ahead.
But I've never lost a night of sleep or worried about safety at Indian Point.
I bet. Whereabouts in New Rochelle are you?
Not too far from the high school. A stone's throw away from Waikiki.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm not too far away from that either. I'm also living in New Rochelle. If you could leave our listeners with anything, one last thought about A, nuclear power, B, the transition going on at the plant today, what would it be?
One, that we're going to do our jobs, and that's going to be a safe transition and shut down. Indian Point will cease operations by 2021. We're going to do our jobs. We're going to keep our eyes on the ball and do that job well. And it has been our honor and pleasure to serve this community for the past several decades.
And you're too young to retire. That giant brain, you can't put it in a fishbowl and say, I'm not going to do this anymore. You'll have to do something.
Well, hopefully somebody will find some use for me. Andrew says I should play more golf, so maybe I'll do that. But most importantly, I still have a daughter to graduate from college, so Dad will be carrying a mailbag for a few more years.
Okay, wait a minute, Ken. He said that he likes you playing golf. Does that mean that he got a better score than you?
Oh, no. We have a great time. And, you know, again, today, being at today's event here for Guiding Eyes for the Blind, a great opportunity to experience the community fellowship that we have here in Westchester, where people give their time and their wealth to support programs to improve the lives of other people. And, again, it's one of the things that it's been our pleasure, Entergy as a corporate citizen here in Westchester, to support these organizations and not-for-profits here in Westchester to do an outstanding job.
Entergy always has done that. Ken, what a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Don't want to waste that brain or that experience. Thank you very much. Folks, thank you for listening in today. We've been broadcasting live from Mount Kisco Country Club here in the heart of Westchester, New York, the 42nd annual Golf Classic for Guiding Eyes for the Blind. Bob Marone for Jim Cleefield and Matt Cain.
Yeah. Contractors, can't find the construction equipment you need?
Call 1-800-DURANTI. Durante Rentals has it all, from skid steers to cement mixers, light towers to mini excavators, generators to scissor lifts. Our equipment is always available and always well-maintained.
Are you worried about employee downtime due to equipment delivery delays?
Call 1-800-DURANTI. At Durante Rentals, on-time delivery of your construction equipment is our priority.
Is your job site located in New York, New Jersey, or Connecticut?
Call 1-800-DURANTI. With 7 metro area locations, Durante Rentals has got you covered.
Do you want to be treated as more than just a number?
Call 1-800-DURANTI. As a family-owned business, customer service has always been Durante Rentals' number one priority.
Are you looking to save time and money on your next construction project?
Call 1-800-DURANTI. The friendly and knowledgeable staff at Durante Rentals makes renting equipment easy and affordable.
With locations in Mount Vernon, the Bronx, West Nyack, Flushing, Queens, Carmel, Elmsford, and Brewster, call Durante Rentals at 1-800-DURANTI or click DuranteRentals.com.
Durante Rentals, the most dependable name in construction equipment rentals, sales, parts, and service. Call 1-800-DURANTI today.
You're listening to Westchester Talk Radio.
Powered by Shark Media, a division of Shark Creative.
And made possible by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center.
Visit SafeSecureVinyl.com.
Going once, going twice, we have returned. This is Westchester Talk Radio. We're broadcasting live from the Mount Kisco Country Club in the heart of Westchester, New York. We're here for the Guiding Eyes for the Blind 42nd Annual Golf Classic. I'm Bob Marone. I'm here with Jim Cleefield and Matt Kay, and you'll hear his voice in a little bit. We're produced this evening by Shaw Creative and made possible by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center, Lipolis Electric, Genesis Exhibits, Breezemont Day Camp, Facelifts Remodeling, and the White Plains YMCA.
Youth Development, Healthy Living, and Social Responsibility.
That is Matt Kahan, and as you can see, speaking is not his first assignment nonetheless. We have a very interesting woman with us. Amy Popola. It's a very poetic name, a poetic Popola. She was the auctioneer today, and we're thinking what you're thinking. How do you get that job? First of all, thank you for being with us.
You're very welcome. It's my pleasure. I was here last year. It's my second rodeo.
This is your second rodeo. Your eyes sparkle when you smile. You've probably heard that before, huh?
Yes, it helps.
Well, how did you get into the dimples and everything? How did you get into the auction business?
I worked at Sotheby's in my 20s, and then I apprenticed.
But Sotheby's, so you were auctioning off paintings and...
Right, but actually I wasn't an auctioneer there. I auctioneered at a regional auction house. I mean, auctioneering is an apprenticing industry. Someone has to help you get the courage to go on a podium and, you know, sell art and antiques. Or at a charity function, raising money for good causes.
Well, it's difficult. I mean, I've done a little bit of it because of being a radio guy. I get asked to MC a lot of events, but I'm not a pro at it.
You have that voice.
Oh, well, thank you. She knows how to... I'm melting. Okay, who couldn't melt around you? Okay, so what were you doing at Sotheby's when you evolved into auctioning?
I was an appraiser, furniture decorations, rugs, and carpets.
How does an appraiser become a
auctioneer.
Yeah. Thank you. Couldn't think of the word.
Once you work in an auction industry and you really love it, you'll find your niche somewhere in that industry.
What do you love about it?
The theatrics.
Tell me about the theatrics.
Well, you're running a show. You know, it's like you have a call time, you've got a schedule, you've got to stay on point, you have to pronounce words correctly, and be able to count at the same time. And money is changing hands. You know, you're giving objects a new place to live, or you're giving people an opportunity for a vacation, and the money goes to the charity.
So. And objects a new place to live, that's right. Now, do you auction off relics like myself, antiques?
Just objects, inanimate objects.
I can be inanimate, trust me. All right. How was the first auction you ever did, and how did you practice for it?
I attended a lot of auctions, so I didn't actually practice. I attended thousands of auctions, and then it just made sense to be up on that podium handling the microphone. It was a natural fit.
Now, can you make a living at it? Do you do it often enough to make a living, or is it a side job?
This is my living.
Okay.
Yep. And half of it is auctioneering, and the other half is art collection management and appraising.
So you still do that, too?
I do that, too. That's like the day job versus the evenings and weekends.
Okay. Now, sometimes when we do, for example, we just had a long pause, maybe an hour, so I'm warming up again. But when you do a radio show where there are a lot of great guests and your energy level's up, do you have to unwind afterwards?
Absolutely. You have to decompress.
Decompress is right. Now, we're going to have an auctioneer right now. You see this shark? It's a transitioning shark, as you can see.
Transitioning from what?
It wants to be a salmon. See, it's called... So now here we have, you're going to auction this off. We have a shark transitioning to be a salmon that is a keepsake. We'll value it at $500. How would you start?
First, I would probably start with the fact it's really not transitioning to a salmon. It's fiberglass painted, I think. Yeah, it's hollow. It's pretty, not too heavy. So
hold on, let me see how to... Give me your head, Matt. Yep, definitely.
Not too heavy, so you could probably mount it on your wall or hang it from the ceiling.
That would hurt.
No, just hang it from the ceiling. It'd be kind of a cool, you know, cave kind of addition to your basement.
Oh, you're just cruel. Would you pretend that it's nice, please?
Where did you keep this shark? His nose is all dinged up. He's got a little broken fin. Like, you weren't very nice to him.
You spend 30 years in the ocean. See how your nose looks and your fins. You know, he's chasing food, little shrimp and other things, people, legs. So please pretend that it's a freaking gold shark, would you?
If it was a gold shark, we'd start at definitely $50,000.
Okay, $50,000. Ladies and gentlemen, Amy Popola, and if you pronounce a name, we'll give you a free shark. $50,000 gold shark. Go.
Do I hear $50,000? How about $22,500? How about $51,000? $51,000 or $55,000?
$52,000.
$53,000. I have $53,000 against you. Do you say $55,000?
$54,000.
$55,000 is next.
The man with the cement head says 57. He's double the ant.
There's a person in the back of the room that said 60,000.
You love that.
Kick it up.
Now, does anybody else in your family do this?
No one else in my family.
You have kids? Do they do this?
No. Just me.
Just you?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Your husband doesn't do this? You do?
Nope. This is a lifestyle job. You can't have too many auctioneers in the same house.
I have a question. Now, when you have an argument with your husband, I'm assuming you always get the last word because...
Dude, you must be a hell of a woman to argue with.
You have to know when to back down and when the room is done. You have to know when the room is done.
My guest is auctioneer. Now, she also does appraise things. She's worked for Sotheby's. She's a professional auctioneer. Her name is Amy Popola. Now, where are you from?
I live in Manhattan.
Manhattan, whereabouts in Manhattan?
On the Upper West Side by 97.
Watch this. This is how I get dates like this. Yeah, see, no. Where in the Upper West Side?
Near 97th Street.
Okay, it's not far from the 92nd Street. Why? Okay, back to auctioning again. How often, how many days a week do you do this?
Approximately two in the season. You know, there's seasons just like schools. Like there's spring and fall charity auction season, and there's monthly auctions for another venue.
It must be cool, like, if you want to get rid of your furniture, just auction it off. Invite people over.
Better if you want to buy furniture, buy it at auction, so then you can sell it out. Sell it when you're done.
Look at you, have like an evil brain. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in northern New Jersey, and in Ridgewood.
Oh, in Ridgewood. A dear friend of mine lived in. He comes from northern New Jersey, the trailer trash section. Go ahead.
Yeah. I come from Emerson. Yeah.
What kind of people live in Emerson? How's it? What kind of a neighborhood is that?
The only thing I know is at Emerson, I think we played you in high school because we were both Division IV teams.
Emerson, is that where the people that like drive cabs and bring food service come to the house?
I don't know. Ridgewood is not the town to ask that question. Ridgewood is its own world, that's for sure.
I think I forgot. How long have you been doing this?
I have been auctioneering 15 years.
Wow, you really love it, don't you?
Yeah, and I do keep track of how many lots I've sold, and I'm around 75,000.
What's a lot, meaning one thing?
One thing, one package, vacation, whatever. And this charity auction season, I'm really closing in on raising $1 million across 20 different charities.
This year?
This year. This season, this spring.
You're driven.
I am committed.
Committed, you're driven. Now, this is inside baseball, I know, but I'm really curious. Do you get a flat fee or do you get a percentage of what you sell?
Well, that's an easy answer. It's never a percentage because that's actually unethical. So the rules in the auction world, unless it's you're selling houses, like real estate, you can get a cut from both sides. But in the auction industry, it's and for tangibles or charities, it's absolutely a flat fee if you're charging a fee at all.
So you negotiate this before you do it?
Yeah, you negotiate it before you do it, and you try to come up with something that's reasonable, because this is for charity.
Do you have an agent, or are you just by word of mouth?
I do not have an agent, but I have agents said to me, I can make you a lot of money, and I was like, eh.
Well, I'm pretty sure you could speak for yourself, and quickly as well.
Yes, I'd like to see them keep up with me, but why would I give them a cut?
Oh, my goodness.
There you go.
What we have, I just realized something. The shark is on the wrong side of this table. God bless you. This is so interesting. And when how long did it take you to get good at it?
I'd say it probably took 20 sales, really. I mean, it's you practice, and some days you don't feel like you did a great job, but then you just listen to the audience and you try to get better at reading the room. I do script ahead of time for each event. I don't just walk up there and do it. I've did my research. I looked up facts about the teams or the places that I'm selling, and so it's improv, but it's fun.
Do you prefer that there's not a bar around when you do this?
Yeah, I don't care much about the bar. I don't think that plays a role anymore. And you know why? Because 90% of the people here at any charity event are driving themselves home. So nobody's over drinking at charity events anymore. It's just foolish.
Well, you're still... I think I asked you, where'd you grow up? Oh, you grew up in Northern Jersey, and then you moved to Manhattan, and now you make a lot of money, and you make fun of the rest of the us who speak regularly.
Now I'm a total Manhattan snob, yes.
No, you are not. You're anything but. What a delightful woman. You're allowed to shake your hand?
Yes, we're shaking hands right now for those people who don't know what's going on.
Yeah, we're not doing anything untoward. I haven't told her that she looks good, and I can't get in trouble. Yes, Matt.
Is she going to bang the gavel now?
I didn't even know I was going to give the interview, so my gavel's at at the table.
You should have brought the gavel.
I would have brought the gavel, but I don't have it. It's at the table.
What a pleasure. Amy Popola, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Now we know where we can get an auctioneer, and you still won't auction off this shark. All right, take care, folks. That does wrap things up for today. We'll see you next time. I'm Bob Marone on behalf of Shark Creative, Jim Cleefield, Matt Cahan, and the crazy auction woman. Bye.
News, trends, and more.
No one knows Westchester County better than we do.
We are Westchester Talk Radio.